This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. Subscribe to the podcast Beyond Politics. They host some of the biggest names and smartest minds. Beyond Politics is from a former Democratic congressman who helped ignite Barack Obama's campaign and a former campaign manager and political columnist. They go beyond the usual chatter on politics, news, science, and books. It's politics and everything beyond. On Beyond Politics, subscribe wherever you get your podcast. Broadcasting live on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, and in the evenings on WCPT 820, Chicago's Progressive Talk. It is the Matt McNeil Show for your Thursday. Good to have you with us today. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Now, we've been mentioning the Stephanie Miller Sexy Liberal Save the World Comedy Tour coming to the Pantages Theater in Minneapolis-St. Paul this Saturday, April 13th. Also going to be in Chicago on August 17th at the Vic Theater. You can get tickets for that. We've been talking with all the people that have been coming on, and this is a real treat because I've never actually talked to Hal Sparks, and now I get the absolute privilege to talk with Hal Sparks. He's kind enough to join us today to talk about Sexy Liberal and, of course, a few other things. Mr. Sparks, thank you very much. I appreciate the time.
My only regrets is our first time talking is virtually. It's almost like we're a throwback to 2020. Yeah. You know, were you better off 4 years ago, trapped in your basement, videoing every loved one you have? Being afraid to go to the grocery store. And riots, by the way. I think Minneapolis would like to have a note about that, because I would like to remind everyone within the sound of my voice, the generalized Minneapolis, St. Paul and extended area, that less than a year into Donald Trump's first and only term, he scuttled not only the pandemic response team and their findings and all that, and just ignored it. He also shut down the COPS program, which is the program that would have broomed bad cops and allowed more flexibility for police forces to get rid of those folks. And wouldn't you know it, like clockwork, 2 years to the day, practically, which is the long game on federal programs at reaching their actual crux point. Wouldn't you know it, we have a giant pandemic and one of the worst examples of police brutality that causes a series of riots that affects the country. Like, it's almost like other people were going, hey, stupid, we fixed this problem for a reason.
Let's douse the country in gas and just hope no one drops a match. You know, that's
right. Yeah, exactly. What is the problem? Gas. We've got liquid gold under our feet. What is the problem if someone wants to set fire to all of it? That's the American way.
This is exciting to chat with you. And I look forward to seeing you when you're in town here on Saturday for Sexy Liberal. You've got a pretty impressive career, television, movies. You've done a lot of these things. For you, yep. One of the things I'd like to get your point is, did you eventually evolve into kind of more political humor, or was it one of those things you've always been that way? Because, like, I started doing traditional radio, and eventually one day it's like, wait a minute, you sent the military troops into a country under false pretenses? Oh, hell to the no. And that was kind of it for me. Was that the same for you?
No, I started doing stand-up when I was 14 years old. Mm-hmm. I was working as a pro, you know, and doing little, like, I could tour as far as I could get and still get back for school the next day if I could drive it, even if the drive took me all the way. I've driven to Minneapolis as a teenager, done a show, turned right around, and drove back to Chicago and went to school the next morning in my life, back when I was a teenager and still going to New Trier. And so, but during that time, my heroes were a mix of, of influences, Steve Martin being on the silly end of the spectrum, who only literally has one political joke in his entire repertoire, which is, if you're not familiar, it's a physical gag in the movie Roxanne, where he reads a newspaper, he buys a newspaper, reads it, starts screaming, and takes another quarter out and puts it back into the dispenser,
right,
and then walks away whistling. That's his attitude towards political humor in that regard. It's a very talk about putting your flag in the ground on a topic. Meanwhile, though, huge Robin Williams fan, huge fan of George Carlin, Lenny Bruce. I grew up with a very 60s influence pattern as far as stand-up, because my dad got a bunch of comedy records in exchange, because he fixed a couple of mandolins for a friend of his. He does that kind of work.
Okay.
And he fixed the fretboard on them. And in exchange for that, I think it was one mandolin and one banjo. He'll set me straight on that. But the guy couldn't pay him. So he said, I got this crate of records. Would you like it? And it was like, you know, those milk cartons that we all kept our LPs in,
yeah.
Which literally defined at one point the choice and size of LPs. That was the thing. Like, everybody will be able to box them in these. We already got the box, right? The cinnamon, right? It was like three of those in a row. It was a genuine long crate of those things. And a third of them were comedy records.
Wow.
Mostly from the 60s, but there were some from the 50s. He had one of like an old tin one with vinyl on the outside of it from the 40s.
Wow.
It was Groucho Marx and vaudeville and that kind of stuff. It was amazing. But I grew up with those. I didn't grow up with sort of the contemporary stand-ups of the 80s when I was in high school. So I was listening to Lenny Bruce and Godfrey Cambridge and Shelley Berman and Lenny Bruce, and Jonathan Winters, and you know, that crowd, and early Carlin, right? And so there was a lot of politics in that. Mort Saul, he had a couple of Mort Saul records in there. Tom Lehrer, which was a mix of, you know, the musical part of it. And so that was always infused that's part of stand-up. It's why it is a uniquely American art form, quite frankly. It's why we effectively invented it, you know, and why because we were one of the few countries in the world where you were totally allowed to do it, which is at the time. Tell that to Lenny Bruce. But again, I thought he should have gone to jail and he would have been alive now and a hero if he hadn't fought it so hard. But that's another story for another time. But anyways, I won the Funniest Teenager in Chicago contest when I was 17 years old. I also won second place when I was 15. I won in my age category, but I won second overall, and I kept at it because it's a wonderful big career. And in my second routine, I had a bit about basically an anti-smoking bit. Effectively, it was about growing up on a tobacco farm in Kentucky and picking tobacco worms, like as a summer job, off the plants, you know, because they spread disease and God forbid anyone should get sick.
Yeah.
And so that was kind of the essence of that joke. And I was 17. I was pretty proud of that one. Right. And I got from Aaron Freeman, who was a comedian in Chicago, political comic known for years, old black gentleman, very funny, a Chicago staple, a classic. He used to have a place called the Clout Club in Chicago, which was a sort of small comedy boutique club that was full of guys smoking cigars. It was like, it was literally like an old pre-burlesque comedy club where men would go to listen to comedy and laugh. Blah, blah, blah. And I was doing Reagan jokes before I was old enough to vote in that place. And I had to get an escort in and out of the building because I wasn't old enough to drink. And, you know, and I never have because of that and myriad of other reasons. But I would go up on stage telling Reagan jokes at 17 years old. And it'd be these guys look like the cover of the Warrant Dirty, Rotten, Filthy, Stinking Rich album, like big bulbous heads and cigars and right. And they'd go, what the hell do you know? You know, like they all had that attitude. And then halfway through my set, like, kid's got a point. That's hilarious. You know? And so, but I do make a distinction, and this happened kind of about the same time you're talking about, your conversion from what would be run-of-the-mill fun time radio and political around Bush and the Iraq War and all that kind of stuff.
Yep.
One thing that my conversion in that time was a shift, because I've been naming names my whole political life. If I want to do a joke about Clinton or Reagan or Bush one or any of that stuff, I had no problem dropping them into the joke. But you'll recall after 9/11, there was this this circle the wagons sort of mentality that people had, that if you attack Bush, you were attacking America. And he used that as cover for a bunch of hinky crap.
Yep.
It's crucial that people recognize that if people will do that. If you go after the broad strokes when you need, you should be specific, or you're specific when you should go for the broad strokes, people will recognize that and use it as a defense against your argument. And so the long and short of it was, I recognized that even if I was making a good point and the audience agreed with me on the politics of it, if I mentioned Bush's name in the bit, even in California, even in, you know, places you'd think were fairly liberal in that regard, there were sections of the audience where their ears would shut. It just wouldn't listen. They wouldn't allow it through because we've been attacked. This is terrible. This is not the time. You know, we got to rally behind this because this was so awful. And I get it. So what I decided to do was name him without naming him. So I started adding around my political jokes, a sort of a socio-political take on what was happening. I could make yellow cake jokes and all that kind of stuff without ever mentioning his name. I could make Abu Ghraib related jokes without ever mentioning his name. But what I would do is I would set up a bit in the beginning of the show that let people know exactly who I was talking about without saying his name, which was based on the concept of what I would call an a-hole hat for radio listeners out there, is that if you're a cowboy, you know, if you wear a cowboy hat, you have to have cows. You can't be afraid of cows and wear a cowboy hat. Like, it doesn't work that way. That's an a-hole hat, right? And so, you know, and I would usually use it as a springboard if somebody was wearing a baseball cap, you know, into the club and they're sitting in the audience wearing a hat indoors, which is just, you know, socially unacceptable as far as I'm concerned. And I would go, you know, you're a jerk for wearing a baseball cap indoors at a sit down environment like a comedy club where food is served. And so, I mean, I guess we should all be happy you're not a fan of hockey goalies because you could be wearing a lot more sports crap that is totally, you know, it like makes no sense in, you know, in the context. I don't know why. I like pirates too. Why don't I just come in with one of those hats that makes the rain run off your head in three directions? That's a great idea, right? So, point, I would use that as sort of a reference point to get everybody to go, I don't take Bush seriously. And I think he's a liar all the time. And so I could say it without mentioning his name. And it let the people who were off, you know, off the hook, who would just shut down at the mention of the name, right?
Uh-huh.
And it's got value. So in my own stand-up, when I'm not doing sexy liberal, I am entirely socio-political. If I can help it in the concept, for me, the creativity of it is, if I can sell the bit and the idea on its morals, ethics, and its comedic quality, I don't have to name names. And therefore, if another wannabe authoritarian, orange-painted moron who's tricked everyone into thinking he's a billionaire comes along 10 years from now, my bit still works.
By the way, can I ask you, can we do a second segment with you? Because that was brilliant, by the way. I want to give
you a chance.
Okay, please do. I want to say I like your comedy style. There's one joke you have on Twitter today, which just made me roll. And it's not a joke. It's just a factual thing. But you putting it out makes it a joke that a single Chick-fil-A makes more money in a year than Truth Social.
Right.
I thought that was great.
Yeah, Donald Trump would make a better use of his money if he'd had just opened a Chick-fil-A. That's it.
Oh, there wouldn't be any product going out the door. You know that as well as I do.
No, he'd be in the back rubbing the oil on himself as all the illegals he derides shovel food into his mouth.
We got to take a break. So let's take a break. Of course, Sexy Liberal at the Pantages Theater this weekend. Also coming to Chicago, the Vic Theater. He's heading home for that one. That's coming up in August. Hal Sparks, kind enough to join us today. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on your Thursday.
For as long as we're together, I'll be the only part.
The edge. It's the Matt McNeil Show, 952-946-6205. Hal Sparks is kind enough to join us for a second segment here. And by the way, I should mention Richard in Chicago, big fan of yours. I mean, I was just out in Chicago last weekend. Love that town. It's a great town out there. So they're sending their love for you.
Oh, I love Chicago. I have to say, there is a... And it wasn't just like I moved from Kentucky to Chicago, you know, to live with my dad and go to school up there and all that kind of stuff. So it's a huge change in my life from a, you know, one road podunk town to a place like Chicago, where a train ride into the city was $1.25 and was just an environment I'd never experienced at length in my entire existence. But one of the best things about Chicago, if not the single best thing, and it's why we have so much great talent coming out of there, is because of the idea that we have a blue collar attitude towards arts.
Yes.
That if you just work and you show up and you do good stuff, you should succeed. There's nobody walking around looking for magic. There's nobody walking around like finding you at the counter at Schwab's and going, "You got moxie, kid. I like the look of you. You got a good chin there. Let me see your eyeballs." You know, checking you like a show horse or a dog at best of show. You know, and that gave me like a renewed understanding of what the potential for being a comedian as a worthwhile artist, both and not just in the political sense, because I happen to think pulp laughter is one of the greatest gifts humanity, you know, has come up with that we can give each other. If I could just make you laugh just for the sake of laughing, that helps already. You know, I don't know about it being the best medicine. It might be a good splint once in a while. And I think in my way of thinking, laughter isn't the best medicine, but it is the greatest suppository, if I do say so myself. That's my ad hill to die on. But Chicago has this thing like where I want to do stand up. Like, okay, this is how it works. You do open mics for free, then you host. Then after you host for a while, you can middle. And then if you middle good enough, you can go middle for somebody out on the road and get some practice elsewhere. And then if you're middle in act, it's 20 minutes. 20-minute set, you create 3 20-minute sets. That's an hour. You can do that at home. Then you can tour on that hour. I was like, that's a ladder I can climb.
Yeah.
Let's do this. And whereas in LA, it's like, I hope somebody looks at what I'm doing and thinks it's good. I don't know. You know? And so there's a real kind of, industrial attitude towards it, which is a beautiful thing. And it means that it's why some of the hardest working, greatest bands come out of Chicago. It's why it's just lovely, like on all fronts. There, I've said it. That's not my gushing.
Well, and here's the deal: is it used to be like that everywhere? I mean, it used to be all the towns in the Midwest used to be like that, where it was it wasn't just a steel mill, wasn't just a flour mill, it wasn't this. You could be an artist, you could do comedy, you could do music, and everyone respected it. And it only seems like Chicago, Madison, Minneapolis, St. Paul. There's only a few metros left that still is kind of that standard. But it's so intertwined where it is still there. It's so intertwined with the blue collar culture
and the culture.
Exactly. You can't miss it. I mean, and you see it everywhere in Chicago. I mean, I love the art everywhere. Everywhere you go is just great art. On any building space, they're putting a mural on it.
Yep.
And that makes it better.
Agreed. And it makes it, integrates the space more. And you can, even if you hate every mural in the place, that's part of the character of the town.
Yes.
You know what I mean? That's your part to play in the environment. If you go, God, if I see one more giant smiling local holding some sort of product in their hand that they look, great. Yes, we get it. Dairy farmers. Understood. Sure. Great. Good. I see one more of those. Yeah. And that's a great thing. Again, you're just as the joke I used to have about Chicago is that it's a town disguised as a city, and that you could be literally being held up at gunpoint and robbed, and you could go, how about those Cubs, huh? And the person robbing you go, I know, right? It's just crazy.
That's about the most accurate description of Chicago I've heard. Minneapolis, St. Paul this weekend. Is this your first full tour with Steph and the crew? Or I know you've done a few shows.
No, you've done a few shows. I started this thing. I was the one trying to get John Fugelsang and I were trying to figure out a way to like coax Steph out into doing this kind of thing. He and I did a show years ago. We were trying to jumpstart by ourselves called Politics, Sex, and Religion, the Politics, Sex, and Religion Tour, where the two of us would do like dueling sets and then Q&A afterwards. And, and that effectively became the Sexy Liberal Tour. We took that and kind of pitched it like Steph and then famous people come up and during our Q&A thing, it would be great. We could take this out and people need it. And especially around that, the election cycles that we've been through, it was crucial. I always felt that in 2016, we should have been out more. We should have been doing what we're doing this year. And this year, we're leaving nothing on the field, or spending anything in the gym or the locker, I guess, or whatever the analogy is, because sports ball is good fun doing sports things. Go whatever team I am sitting next to the biggest fan of in this environment where we are all eating pretzels. In all seriousness, like I feel like you have to stand up for your beliefs in the most forward and charming way you can. when you marched against the Iraq War, marching has found its place. Mm-hmm. I've walked every AIDS walk in the country, including Minneapolis's, twice, at least. And that's important. But when it comes to changing people's minds specifically about issues and their voting patterns and getting them motivated and stuff, it can't all be gloom and doom. It has to be, look, the whole point of this is gloom and doom that direction. But if you follow us, it's going to be good. And not just good, like we'll all survive. But this is what life is about. Laughter, music, fun. You know, that's, we need to get back to that. That's one of the greatest things about Joe Biden, besides the fact that he's managed to pass all the bills they said he couldn't pass.
Yeah.
The record is, compared to almost anybody else, it's astounding, including getting us out of Afghanistan after 21 frigging years, is the fact that he's wonderfully made politics slightly boring again from his perspective. He's just going back to all the normal, you know, Easter egg rolls and state dinners and all that kind of stuff and standard movements and trying to lower the cost of prescription drugs, all the stuff you want your president to do, and none of the crap where they just eat up your bandwidth with their nonsense all the time. And in the case of Trump, that's really what I think a lot of people are going to be looking forward to getting past, because this is Donald Trump's last election.
Yes.
Okay. He's not running again, and he's not going to win. Let me tell you that he is not going to win. The only difference is if people are on our side of the aisle and independents who lean one way or another, if they're able to convince Republicans to stop messing around with this far right garbage and try to come to the table with real beliefs again.
Yeah.
If we don't stomp that nonsense into a mud hole and march it dry, they're going to go, well, maybe we just weren't anti-woman enough. Maybe we weren't anti-immigrant enough. We were just too quiet about it.
Well, again, we have to. You're the easiest interview I've ever done. Well, Schechter's pretty good too.
Yeah, sure.
The guys are fantastic. You want more of this? He's exactly right. You want to be you want to be with people that basically are on your side. You want to go to Sexy Liberal this Saturday, the Pantages Theater. Hal Sparks, part of that crew. Hal, as a pleasure to have you on. Thank you very much. I appreciate the time.
Absolutely. See you this weekend.
See you this weekend. We'll take a break. Come back. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Broadcasting in the evening on WCPT 820, Chicago's Progressive Talk, and in the afternoons here on the Mothership, AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show on your Thursday. How freaking cool is Hal Sparks, man? Patrick is here with us today here because we had to get right into Hal. How cool is Hal Sparks, man?
That was pretty amazing.
I did not know the inside scoop that was actually him and Fugle saying that was the ones that came up with the idea of Sexy Liberal. That's there you go. History you can use. For the folks in Chicago, once again, this is coming up here with the DNC special at the Vic Theater, Saturday, August 17th. You want to get tickets for that. In Minneapolis, St. Paul, they're here this weekend. And as a matter of fact, coming up in the 4 o'clock hour, I got our final pair of tickets we're giving away for the show, as well as also the meet and greet we're doing beforehand at On the Rock. So that's going to be on April 13th at the Pantages Theater. Enjoy. And I'm going to be out on stage. I'm going to be the very beginning. Fugelsang out of the surprise. I am the first person to hit the stage in the entire Sexy Liberal tour. Yee. Well, it can only go up from here. There you go. Speaking of Groucho Marx, hello there.
Where's my link for a refund?
No refunds. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Let's talk about O.J. Simpson. He passed away apparently yesterday, I think it was. He was in hospice care because he had cancer. You can tell me anything you like. The dude killed those two people. Yeah, he did. It is one of the worst prosecuted cases in the history of mankind. Although I will say it was, I think that the LA County prosecutor was so unexpecting what was coming down the line with Johnny Cochran
And Cochran did a fantastic job, there. Of course, there was a joke from Bill Hader on Saturday Night Live. He did a joke where he was the, he was a host of a game show called, I think it was Game of Thrones. And he comes on and he says, "Hi, my name is O.J. Simpson. And yes, my life has been hard." And, you know, that's exactly it. I mean, just the entire thing, he became so synonymous with, yeah. And, you know, I'll never forget. Where were you before 9/11? One of the more, you know, telling bellwether moments was, where were you when the Bronco chase happened? Because that was one of the things that I think gets lost in history was how kind of big that was. The Bronco chase. I mean, So what had happened is, he on June 17th. Now he was staying, and this is, by the way, a lot of things kind of started there. Our first look into the Kardashians was this, because the Kardashians, Robert Kardashian, was his buddy, and he was staying at the Kardashian house. On June 17th, detectives recommended that Simpson be charged with 2 counts of first degree murder with special circumstances for multiple killings. After the final DNA results came back, the LAPD noted Shapiro at 8:30 a.m. That Simpson would have to turn himself in that day. Basically what ended up happening was they went to arrest him. He had disappeared. At 5 p.m., Kardashian and one of his defense lawyers read Simpson's public letter. In the letter, Simpson sent greetings to 24 friends and wrote, "First, everyone understand I had nothing to do with Nicole's murder." He described the fights with Brown and their decisions not to reconcile their friendship. Their relationship, blah, 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 blah. Through the television, Shapiro appealed to Simpson to surrender. News helicopters were searching L.A. And so they knew that Al Cowlings, had a white Ford Bronco. And so in one of the most L.A. things that could ever happen, every news channel there sent up their airborne units to search for the white Bronco. At 5:51, Simpson reportedly called 911. The call was traced to the Santa Ana Freeway near Lake Forest. At around 6:20, a motorist in Orange County notified California Highway Patrol after seeing someone believed to be Simpson riding the Bronco on the I-5 freeway heading north. The police tracked calls placed by Simpson on his cell phone. At 6:45, police officer Ruth Dixon saw the Bronco heading north on Interstate 405, and she caught up with it. Cowlings yelled out that Simpson was in the back seat. The vehicle was pointing a gun at his own head. The officer backed off but followed the vehicle at 35 miles per hour with up to 20 police cars following her in the chase. Zoe Tour of KCBS was the first to find Simpson from the news helicopter after colleagues heard that the FBI's mobile phone tracking had located Simpson on the El Toro Y. More than 9 hour helicopters eventually appointed to their pursuit. Tur compared the fleet of Apocalypse Now and the high degree of media participation caused camera signals to appear in incorrect television channels. The chase was so long that one helicopter ran out of fuel, forcing it to a station to ask for another camera feed. Knowing that Cowlings was listening to KNX AM sports announcer Pete Arbogast, called Simpson's former head football coach John McKay and connected him to Simpson. As both of the men wept, Simpson told McKay, "Okay, coach, I won't do anything stupid, I promise, off the air. There's no doubt in my mind McKay stopped O.J. from killing himself in the back of the Bronco." McKay reiterated on the radio that he pleaded to Simpson to turn himself in instead of committing suicide. "Oh, my God, we love you, Juice. Just pull over and I'll come out and stand by for the rest of your life." This, of course, there was a lot of evidence that he indeed did the murder. As a matter of fact, I would say there was a lot to this case. There just was so much, and just reliving it. One of the things I kind of realized was that when there was a lot of people that were rooting for O.J. Simpson through this whole case, because there were, you know, it just was one of those things where there had just been so many injustices against the black community that, you know, that they felt as if this was, you know, there was a lot of people that felt like it was perfectly fine with them. Of course, the O.J. Simpson did get basically a massive civil. What was the civil? Was it $33 million? I mean, he had to sell everything, and he, you know, he refused to turn over some stuff, and he ended up having a lot of problems later on in life. He was, yeah, very much persona non grata in Los Angeles or anywhere. I mean, he was in Vegas. I think it was in Vegas where he got into trouble. I think that it was where I have the story here. He went to a Nevada prison in 2008. Simpson was found guilty of robbery and kidnapping stemming from a 2007 incident in a Las Vegas hotel over sports memorabilia Simpson believed was stolen from him. The verdict came 13 years to the day after the not guilty verdict in the double murder trial. Simpson spent 9 years in a Nevada prison before he was released. He would never escape the infamy of the double murder trial. More than 20 years later, people are obsessed with it. FX released The People vs. O.J. Simpson, the American crime story in 2016, which was a popular hit. The ESPN released a critically acclaimed five-part O.J. Made in America documentary later that year. Simpson's death will lead to further exploitation of his legacy that is unlike any other American sports hit in sports history. You know, it was, for me, I was too late for his athletic career. I knew him far more as the partner, you know, to Leslie Nielsen in the Naked Gun movies. And was it Norbert was the character? And so it, yeah, I remember this. I was in Beloit, Wisconsin at that time, working for a radio station down there. And I, on the weeknights, I was part of they had a bar that had sand volleyball. And so we were supposed to go back there and play a sand volleyball match, you know, mainly a reason to drink. But we went out and we were going to go do that. And hearing people say, oh, I can't believe this is going on. I remember sitting in there and watching, going back into the bar and watching the Bronco chase. And it was one of the most watched news events of all time. 97 million people watched it. More people watched that than watched the Super Bowl that year, because it was, you know, live action as it was going. There's a lot of people that point to that as kind of the beginning of, you know, reality television, and this idea that do we really, as long as we have drama, we have, you know, stories, we don't need actors. We can just kind of see the real world for what it is. I think Cops at that point had already been on for a while. And so it was kind of, that was the really springboard. I also remember this, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I could swear YouTube started because of this. Because, and I don't think it might not have been the Bronco chase, but it was people were searching the young internet at that time for video clips of either the trial or of the chase or of various things. And they started YouTube so people could find video clips of O.J. Simpson. That's the way, at least I think that's right. That's the story I think I remember on that. Jim is in St. Louis Park. He in Minnesota here. He wanted to chime in. Welcome on in, Jim. Jim?
I had heard one time. Hi, Matt?
Yes.
I had heard one time that 75% of African-American people thought that O.J. was innocent, and 75% of white people thought he was guilty. That was one. And I watched The People versus O.J., which is a drama about it, but you know, I thought that was a really good production.
And thanks, Jim. I appreciate the phone call. Considering, I mean, it's only just recently, you know, like the last 10, 15 years that everyone's carrying around these phones, that we see that the black population has been telling the truth the entire time over the misjustice and the mistreatment of them at the hands of law enforcement. We now see that. I mean, I didn't want to break it to Hal Sparks here when he talked about George Floyd. I don't want to break it. It's like, let me tell you about Jaleel Stallings. That happened 2 days later. Let me tell you about Ricky Cobb. Let me tell you, yeah, we could run the whole lit gamut, couldn't we? Can't we? Could. But the one of the things that as you look back on it, what Johnny Cochran really did, and the real, I mean, success story off that trial was Cochran, because, you know, he showed that you can attack the direct. Most other defense attorneys would have never tried the strategy he did. And I think this is why the LA County prosecutors look so incompetent during this whole thing, is that he went directly at their evidence, just directly at it, and called into question it and all these things. And he knew that if it became a circus, that there's a decent chance that he would be found not guilty. And it worked. And it worked. And it does show you when the civil trial happened. And once again, that when you're looking at a civil trial, the bar of guilt is a lot less. I don't think anyone on his legal team for his criminal defense trial was on his legal team for the civil trial. I think they all knew there was no chance in the world they're going to win that. And so they basically got away from that as quickly as possible. And at least I don't remember that being the case. I don't think Cochran was there for the civil trial. I don't think he was. But he lost, what was it? It was like $33 million in that. And that was actually part of the reason why he was arrested there, because he tried his best to stash all of his sports memorabilia in a whole bunch of different areas. But he owed so much money to the families that they basically went and took all that stuff and, you know, they hunted it all down. And that was that whole thing in Vegas, was he felt as if, no, this was stolen from me. I want it back. And I believe there was a gut involved on that, and it wasn't his, and he went to jail for it. A lot of people are posting Norm Macdonald videos. I mean, what made Norm Macdonald on Saturday Night Live his career was basically just outright calling O.J. Simpson guilty every Saturday night for a year plus, and saying yes, and not even caring. I mean, as a matter of fact, it's long been reported that was the thing that pushed Saturday Night Live to get rid of Norm Macdonald. So, what else can we say? He has passed away. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show.
Everybody knows that you talk, saying I'm the one that you want. Boy, bring a game, what you got. Really had enough of it.
It's the Matt McNeil Show on your Thursday once again. And by the way, tomorrow, all two hours. And it's a tough life. All 2 hours, Cliff Schechter is going to be kind enough to join us in studio for the entire time, as he is in town for Sexy Liberal as well. Looking forward to having him here and talking about various things. And yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. I'm really looking forward to it. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205 is the phone number. I want to read this story because this is coming out today. The Biden administration today finalized a new rule that would require anyone selling a gun to obtain a federal license and conduct background checks. The rule aims to close what is known as the gun show loophole. Gun merchants who sell online, by mail, or at flea markets and gun shows up until now have not been subject to the same federal regulations as those who own and operate gun stores as their main source of income. The single gap in our federal background check system has caused unimaginable pain and suffering, said Vice President Kamala Harris, who oversees the White House Office of Gun Violence and Prevention, said on a call with reporters. The new rule from the Department of Justice and the Bureau of ATF and Explosives stems from the requirements of the bipartisan gun safety legislation package Congress passed in 2022. It's likely to face legal challenges, but a senior White House official told reporters on the call that the Biden administration is confident the rules survive any legal disputes. Strong regulations like this one are not the conflict of the Second Amendment. The 2022 law would require those gun sellers to obtain a federal firearm license, record gun purchases, and conduct background checks, which are the same requirements as brick and mortar gun shops. And let's be honest about it. There's a lot of people buying guns and then using them illegally from this thing. It's a way for them to get a gun without a background check. So, yeah, this is long, long, long overdue. And, so yesterday in the suburbs of Minneapolis, we had two police officers shot. They responded to they were just trying to drop off a warrant. And it's still not clear whether it was just a, you know, a warrant for a court appearance or a search warrant, but they ended up getting into a firefight with an individual. That individual is dead. The two officers were injured. One was released at the scene. One went to the hospital. And as the dad sort of said, it was suicide by cop. That's the feeling that he has, at least. We still don't even know the name of the individual. But I made the point, and I'm going to continue to make this point, that you cannot be pro-cop without also being pro-gun control. You just can't. You can't be looking, I mean, every time a police officer, you know, pulls someone over, they shouldn't have to approach a vehicle acting like they're on patrol in Fallujah. Okay? Every time they have to drop off, like county attorneys have to drop off restraining orders. Every time they drop off a restraining order, they shouldn't have to act like they're doing a door-to-door search in Fallujah. You shouldn't have, every time a police officer goes out to a community event, they have to be dressed in full body gear and taking an armored personnel vehicle. The reason why this exists, this didn't used to exist in our world. The reason why it exists today is because there are so many guns in our society that it is ungodly toxic out there. Now, I talked about that yesterday, and I made the post yesterday about the you can't be pro-cop unless you're also pro-gun control, which, of course, set off all the rightos. And it's funny. There's nothing I find funnier than people coming to my page and telling me, you made me come here and comment. Oh, okay. If I look at your Twitter handle and it's 18 numbers with the word Chet in there, I'm not going to really give a rat's caboose about what you think. I don't care about what most of the people on Twitter think. I really don't. I'm not, because you're not here to have a debate. Dear Lord, I had one guy today say, Matt, every gun that's used in a crime is a gun that was illegally obtained. And it took me 2 seconds to type in legal gun purchases used in crimes. The first one that came up is by far the vast majority of shootings, you know, guns used in mass shootings were legally purchased guns. The vast majority of them. And of course, what's he say? Well, I'm not talking about those shootings. Shut up. Let's move the goalposts, because that's it. They are so, these gun kooks, their minds are rotten. They can't think for themselves. They don't want to think for themselves. And when you present with them something of common sense, that if you're pro-cop, you have to be pro-gun control because the guns are a big problem for the cops. They just can't control themselves. But I got to share with you. There are two arguments I have consistently heard today which are unbelievable. That this is, like I said, their minds are rotten. They're gun drunk. Number one, cops love all the guns everywhere. They do. Sure, there's some risk, but they know people have their back when they need it. What? Wait, you think the cops want a bunch of just neighbors to run out there with their automatic weapons onto a crime scene? I don't think you know what you're talking about. They continue, unfortunately, some cops are being shot, but all the cops I know would rather have that than gun regulations. Really? 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 You're telling me there are police officers who have been shot who are saying, you know what? Thank God that gun was easy to purchase. Thank God the gun show loophole made sure that guy who should have never been able to have a gun was able to get a gun. Unbelievable. Here's the other one. This is the one that I find hilarious, because when they say we need to regulate guns, the first thing they say in there is, you're a fascist. That's the first thing they'll yell at you. The same exact people then will come back and say, once again, screaming against fascism because they think that controlling guns is fascism. They'll say, we should stop people from critically talking about the police. That sounds pretty fascist. Search anyone anytime they want, as long as it's a minority in the city. That sounds really fascist. and pre-arrest individuals who might commit a crime. You know, those people, as they refer to them. That sounds really, really fascist. But hey, heaven forbid you point out they're the thing that they basically scream that everyone else is, because that is MAGA world today. Chicago, have a good one. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Minneapolis, St. Paul, hour two up next. Hour number two of the show here on your Thursday. Good to have you with us, Matt and Patrick. How about Hal Sparks? That's my first time chatting with the man. That was a treat. Once again, you can see him and Fugelsang and Frangela and, of course, Stephanie Miller. The Sexy Liberal Tour comes to Minneapolis up this weekend. And we have one more pair of tickets to give away today. One more pair, then we're done. One more pair, and not with those tickets, you also get tickets to join us for the pregame party at On the Rocks on 13th and Nicollet at the Nicollet Diner. We are going to be down there to start off with, and then go to the show. It's going to be good fun. One more pair, not now, not giving it away now. Don't harass Patrick. But I will give it away this hour, and then after that, you can go get tickets. We have the link for tickets up on our webpage for you to enjoy. You can come enjoy the show. It's going to be fun. Hal Sparks, my God. By the way, that was one of the easiest interviews I've ever done. The guy, you know, he's just fantastic. And he should just go on out there and do like a history of comedy show. That was fantastic. Because when he brought up the records, when I see him on Saturday, I'm actually going to bring this up with him. When he brought up the records, the first thing I thought is like, oh, that's right. We forget that if you were my age, and Hal Sparks is a little younger than me, I believe, but not much. There was no comedy. Sure, you might see a comedian on The Tonight Show. You might see, if you had early HBO, they did a few comedy specials. But for the most part, the comedy channels didn't start up until the late 80s, if I remember correctly. Most of the comedy you either had to go see in person was Saturday Night Live or was the albums. And the vast majority, I remember listening to comedy albums. They were fantastic. And as a matter of fact, Robert Burrill has some albums out. I still listen to his on the iPhone and stuff like that when I'm out working and stuff. That we forget how much of a base that was of the comedy scene for so many years. Oh, just that brought back some good memories. A lot of great comedy albums that I used to listen to in the 1970s as a kid. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. So I got a lot of news to get to today. I'm going to start with the Uber Lyft thing, because I just want to keep on top of this, because I still, to all the leaders of Minneapolis, okay, Uber Lyft don't want to pay the drivers the rate. You've got multiple rideshare companies that want to come in and fill that void. Why are you guys so determined to only give Uber Lyft what they want, which means basically a substandard living wage for the drivers? Why? You know, they want to leave and other people want to give them the service. That's called capitalism. Let them. Minneapolis City Council voted to delay the start of its newly approved rideshare ordinance Thursday, securing Uber and Lyft services in the city until July 1st. The move comes after months of back and forth with Mayor Jacob Frey and rideshare companies that threatened to leave Minneapolis on May 1st, the ordinance's original effective date. The rule, as it now stands, requires rideshare companies to pay rates of $1.40 per mile and 51 cents per minute. And as we pointed out, they were going to raise this, they're all saying it was going to be raised to $1.21 per mile and 51 cents per minute used as well. And so you're looking at a minimum difference in price, and yet everyone's acting like it's going to be $1 billion to go to the Midway. No, it's not. You want to go to North Loop, that's going to be $6,000. It's going to be like $1 more, if that. Yeah, I'm not. Yeah, I'm at this point. I don't have a lot of. I can hear a lot of people trying to say we have to help Uber Lyft. What I don't hear is, okay, well, Uber Lyft doesn't want to do this, but we've got this ordinance passed. Here are companies that want to do it. Okay, then what's the problem here? A delay is not a fix, said statement from Fry, who has vehemently opposed the ordinance in his current form. While council continues to make a mess of this, I'll be working with policymakers and partners across the state for the disability, hospitality, and business communities to plan a path forward for drivers and riders. Dude, just stop it. You do not give a rat's caboose about the drivers. It's clear you don't. It's clear Mr. Progressive Mayor of Minneapolis does not want to give a livable wage to the damn drivers, man. Just stop it. I mean, like I said, I mean, I just don't. Why are you so betrothed to Uber and Lyft? Other companies want to give us the service at the better rate. Okay, we're done here, right? Are you getting paybacks? Are you getting kickbacks from them? Are you on the board? Is your mom a driver? What is the deal, man? Councilmember Latricia Vitale also criticized the rideshare ordinance, but put in place by her colleagues, thanked the council during the meeting for agreeing to reconsider it, echoing Fry's concern the people of Minneapolis who count on companies like Uber and Lyft for transportation. I'm going to be supporting this also, but I'm not going to be supporting this because I think it's the solution. I'm going to be supporting it because my constituents have been living in fear and anxiety of the uncertainty of whether they'll be able to have a job or have housing, get to their jobs, or get children to school. In this work, all we need is willing to admit we can get things wrong and just think that it's bad policy. I need to think back and fix it. Once again, saying, screw the drivers, and you are. Fry, Vitale, you are. You're just saying, screw the drivers, I don't care, pay them substandard, I'm good with that. And from the bottom of my heart, screw you both. If I can say this, we're supposed to be better than freaking Tennessee. We're supposed to be better than Dallas. You guys sit there and the least of your concern is whether or not that driver is making a livable wage. And like I said, it's not that much more. It's basically 19 cents. Well, 22 cents was the number yesterday. They keep changing that cents per mile thing, or cents per minute thing. I, you guys have to, you guys are acting as if there is no other option here when you have, God, what was it, like 10 rideshare companies that want to come into the city and offer this at what is going to be a buck more. And fine, sure, there are going to be a handful of people where that buck might be the deal breaker. Okay, fine. But I still don't think you pay drivers a lot less just because that's a problem. Maybe the city offers some, you know, vouchers to help out those people. There you go. Done. But this whole notion of the drivers have to be screwed. Come on. We're better than that. And if Uber and Lyft, and why are you guys so betrothed to Uber and Lyft? There are other companies with apps that are really willing to come in here. This is getting ludicrous in the sense, you know, on one side, I want to look at Uber and Lyft and say, it's a buck more, dude, just throw it on there. No one's going to care. In the same sense, in the same exact sense is when they increase the pay rates for workers in Minneapolis. And everyone's like, a burger is going to cost $2 more. Well, it did. And nobody cares. And nobody cares. They still went out and got burgers. Most of the restaurants are packed in this town. It's just dumb for dumb's sake at this point. And then the other thing, which I just, like I said, okay, so Uber and Lyft don't want to play. Fine. So long. Bon voyage. And once again, I think it's Uber just doesn't want to drive in Minneapolis, which means there's a lot of people, especially anyone that's going to the airport, can still get an Uber. They just have to avoid the city of Minneapolis. Fine. Done. You can arrange that. It's easy. I mean, it's for the most part, you know, unless you're in the city of Minneapolis, if you're in the suburbs, if you're in St. Paul, You can get to the airport without ever going into Minneapolis. They're done. I just don't know why, when you have rideshare companies that want to come in here and pick up the slack for this, why everyone's acting like this is going to be destroyed. No, at some point you guys need to get off your, you know, Uber, Lyft, meth machine, whatever the freaking heck that is, and realize, well, maybe we should just be, maybe you should be embracing these new companies as much as you are embracing Uber and Lyft. Just maybe. Bob is in Minneapolis. He wanted to chime in on Jacob Fry. Welcome on in, Bob.
Yeah, you're wondering why he does what he does. Well, I hope I can say this.
You can say that. Go ahead and say it again.
He's a corporate hoe.
Okay. That's
a story bottom line.
Well, I thought you were about to say something much more dirty, man. thanks, Bob. I appreciate the phone call. Well, it's clear. I mean, let's. I'm just reading this thing from Fry himself here. Where did it go? Here it is. The delay is not fixed. Well, council continues to make less mess of this. I'll be working with policymakers and partners from across the disability, hospitality, and business communities to find a path forward for drivers and riders. So wait a second here. The drivers, they don't get a say at the table. You're going with the disability group, the hospitality group. And by the way, nice use of disability first to try to run that as a shield. And I'm not saying that the disability community doesn't use, you know, Uber and Lyft and rideshare services, but this is far more about the hospitality and business communities than it is about anything else. But like I said, all right, so fine. Okay, should I be smarter than everybody else on this? I don't think I should be. I don't think I'm smarter than everybody else on this. So why am I coming up with a fairly equal solution that you guys can't seem to come to? Okay, fine. Pay the 140, $1.40 per mile, 51 cents per minute. Okay, pay that. All right, get these new rideshare companies that are in here in covering it. Tell Uber and Lyft that's the deal. You want to be in Minneapolis, St. Paul, or Minneapolis? You have to do this. They can make their decision. Other companies want to come on in here. If you do have people that cannot afford this, create a voucher program that gives them a hand. You know, people within a certain income, stages, some vouchers so that they can use them. Done. They can offset their costs. People get paid. We're all done here. We're all done here, right? I just do not understand this betrothed nature to just Uber and Lyft. I mean, there are other cities. Austin, Texas stood up to them, and they all left. But immediately other rideshare apps came into town. And we're done here, right? I just don't get why this is so hard. Because, and once again, what it comes down to is there's an absolutist mentality from Fry, which basically, because I get the impression, I'm sorry, I get the very strong impression, Mayor Fry doesn't want even the 121 per mile, 51 cent rate. I think he wants to keep it the way it is until those drivers suck it up. It sucks to be you. And I honestly do. You know, I get tired. Betsy Hodges called this out when she was mayor. I get tired of this idea of Minneapolis supposedly putting progressives in charge, and then you realize, you're not so progressive, dude. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Let's take a break. Come on back. I got a doozy for you. I've got a doozy for you when I come on back. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on your Thursday. AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. I look at this as just, like I said, there's a practical solution here. And I am not a big fan of what you see in these southern states where they basically have written laws where it's, unbelievably unfair wages. And not only do you get people say, well, we only pay you $2.40 an hour, but you get tips. Oh, by the way, you need to give the owner 20% of the tips. We have this way that people get treated, and we have an opportunity to really make a stance here. And I feel like we're failing. Matt is in Minneapolis wanting to chime in. Hey, Matt.
Hey, Matt. Hey, I think you're spot on calling this out. I do want to say the word that I am seeing is that Uber and Lyft were talking about actually leaving the whole state, not just the city of Minneapolis. And then the other thing that I want to comment and say is that, like, if a business isn't able to pay their workers a living wage, then their business model is based on exploitation. And I'll take my answer off the air.
Well, thank you very much. And well, I mean, there's an interesting part of that. What if I was to go to Mayor Fry and say, you know what, we're not going to pay you very much to be the mayor. It's just the way it is. We've determined that, you know, it's just, you know, hey, I get it. Mayors in other cities, they get paid. They don't get paid that well, so we don't think you should get paid that well. As a matter of fact, there's some cities where mayors don't get paid at all, man. It's a volunteer opportunity, so we'll just take your paycheck from you. You think Mayor Fry would go with that? Of course not. And I can tell you right now, I honestly, I mean, I don't live in Minneapolis, so I don't call out Fry that much, but I'll say it like this. I think your standard Uber Lyft driver contributes more on a daily basis to Minneapolis, St. Paul than Mayor Fry does. I'm going to be call it what it is, man. Dude, stop just pandering to Uber Lyft. I mean, that's the one I need you to explain to me. When you have companies that are willing to come in and do it under the new rate, why are they persona non grata to you? Why do we have to stay the Uber Lyft way? Why? You can take an app off your phone and put a new one on. It's pretty damn easy to do. I just don't get that. All right. I'm going to read you the first sentence of this next story. Yeah. Okay. Let's do that. A Republican candidate in the South Metro House District is an election conspiracy theorist who once tried to get into a brawl with the son of a Rosemont City Councilwoman.
That's a doozy for sure.
Okay. That's called setting the hook right there. It got me. Reel me in. Here we go. Drew Roach of Farmington tried to serve then Rosemont City Council member Tammy Block with court papers at her house, notifying her of a lawsuit to try to stop an upcoming primary election. Roach is seeking to replace Representative Pat Garofalo, a veteran Republican lawmaker not seeking re-election in November. House District 58B is a Republican-leaning, although it's like many suburban districts, it's become more purple. I mean, listen to Garofalo. When I started doing this show and Garofalo got into office, he was a very right-wing guy, and even he has become on some issues, very moderate. And I think it's because he sees where his district's going. But it seems like their replacement, it doesn't seem to follow that suit. Republican Tim Pitcher lost the 2016 Senate District 58 race to a Democrat, former Senator Matt Little, for instance. Sean McKnight, a retired Apple Valley police officer, is also running for the Republican endorsement in the seat on this Saturday during the GOP convention in Farmington. Roach is aligned with election deniers and was involved in the lawsuit seeking to stop the 2022 primary election over technicalities. That's what brought him to Block's door on August 2nd, 2022. He was trying to serve Block with papers notifying her of a petition against the city seeking to stop the upcoming primary election, alleging the city had failed to notify the public of upgrades to the electronic voting machine software. Roach and other activists believe the upgrades were tantamount to a new system and should have triggered a public comment period. Okay. I don't think that's right, but okay. Secretary of State Steve Simon said at the time the upgrades were akin to an iPhone update and didn't require public notice. The lawsuit was ultimately dismissed by the state Supreme Court. Block told the police Roach and a woman showed up at her house three times that day. The third time, her 20-year-old son Daniel Tesh got into an altercation with Roach outside of the house as four children watched from Roach's car, according to police report. Tesh, Roach, and Block's fiance all ended up being charged with disorderly conduct. Block called Roach a political extremist and resigned from the city council after the incident. Five police officers responded to the report of two people were fighting in the street about 8:50 p.m. Tesh told police he got into a fight with Roach because he was harassing his mother with three visits and aggressively pounding on the door. Oh, dude, were you? Really? I think the, you know, I don't want to hit the table too hard because the camera, were you really kind of slamming on it? Let me in. This is the authorities. That what you're doing? And by the way, it's 8:50 at night. You were doing this late at night? Come on, man. Aggressively pounding on the door the third time, Block's fiance, Marco Arigara, answered the door and the two exchanged words. Tesh heard the commotion and went outside and told the police things turned physical after Roach said, "I know where you live, mother blank." This is the, this is the guy who's running. "I know where you live." Wait, that sounds like a threat to me. Where do you still know where they live? I mean, is that what you're saying? Or you gonna go get them? Are you gonna scare them? You gonna go do that? Oh God. The Republicans had a chance at picking up the House, and in every one of these races they need to pick up, they are picking the absolute biggest clown car candidates they possibly can. Delicious. Tesh admitted he put Roach in a chokehold, dragged him to the ground. Once again, you're a Republican candidate here. Tesh admitted he put Roach in a chokehold, dragged him to the ground in the neighbor's yard across the street. Then Roach punched Tesh in the face, according to the police report. Roach told police he was trying to serve Block court papers on behalf of a fellow patriot in Rosemont. Roach said Tesh got in his face, blocked him from leaving, and then threw him to the ground, and they began tussling. Roach admitted that he had punched Tesh after being put in the chokehold. "I best believe I threw a punch. He's lucky I didn't get more in." Oh, that's for everyone out there. That's the guy that throws his buddy in front of him and then yells, "Let me at him." Oh, if they hadn't held me back, oh, you would have been cruising for a bruising. "I know where you live." Oh, Roach is appropriate. Oh, God. I'll tell you what, I would have wasted him if not for the cop holding me back, man. I mean, it would have been over. It would have been game over, man. Game over. I want to go to this. I got sexy liberal this weekend. I can't go to the convention. Oh, I want to, though. "You best believe I threw a punch. He's lucky I didn't get in more." All three men were charged with disorderly conduct and brawling, while Tesh and Aranga pled guilty to a misdemeanor disorderly charge. Roach refused to take a deal, was set to go to trial when the charge was dismissed last fall. He told the Reformer by email that the criminal charges were completely politically motivated. Okay. A cadre of election deniers rallied around Roach, raised money for his legal defense, among them Eric Von Mechelen, the right-wing activist who ran in the 22 Republican primary for Secretary of State but lost to another election conspiracy theorist, Kim the Crockpot Crockett, and Rick Weeble, the former mayor of St. Bonnie's, who's become an increasingly prominent purveyor of election fraud claims under the moniker Midwest Swamp Watch. Roach said in an email, in email answers to the Reformer questions, that the only group he's part of is Republicans, Independents, and Democrats, known as the majority of Americans, who agree that we should have secure elections. Asked whether elections should be conducted with voting machines or hand counted, he said, "We should have secure elections where the security can be ensured, openly inspected, audited, and at the least chance for voter fraud. After every Minnesota election, a random group of precincts in every congressional district is chosen for review, totaling roughly 440,000 votes of the 2020 election, spanning more than 200 precincts. The hand tallies were virtually identical to the machine tallies." So, we're fine. Asked whether he thought the 2020 election was rigged, Roach accused Secretary of State Steve Simon of subverting democracy and doing an end run around Minnesota voters when he agreed to expand absentee voting during the pandemic. The Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals wound up ruling the consent decree extending the absentee voting deadline by a week was unconstitutional and ordered ballots received after Election Day to be segregated as well. It made no difference in the outcome, however, as President Joe Biden easily won Minnesota. Not only did those election law violations happen in Minnesota, but in all states all over the country, Roach said. Asked whether Biden was rightfully elected president, he said, according to the U.S. Constitution, only the Electoral College, subject to congressional approval, elects a president, and that is what took place with Joe Biden some 4 years ago. Well, at least from that answer, it sounds like he's saying, yeah, Joe Biden did win the election. So, does he have a chance down in Farmington for Garofalo's seat? 58B? You know, it's between him and Sean McKnight. And one of the things I'll say is that these conventions, the more extremist the Republicans, that's the part that goes. That's the part that's there. So, yeah, we'll have to see. I guarantee you I'll have something to talk about on Monday. That's for sure. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on your Thursday. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. So here's the deal. I got one more pair of tickets to Sexy Liberal. One more pair to give away right now. With this pair of tickets also comes a pair of tickets to the pregame event, the tailgate event, over at On the Rocks at the Nicolette Diner. Starts at 4:30, runs till 7, and then the show starts at 8 o'clock. You got Fugelsang, you've got Hal Sparks, you got Frangela, you got Stephanie Miller. Cliff Schechter is going to be in town for that. It's going to be a hoot at the Pantages Theater. So, caller number 5 right now, 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Caller number 5, you'll win the pair of tickets to Sexy Liberal, as well as also you'll get a pair of tickets to the pregame event. Good luck with that. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Caller number 5. Okay. One thing I wanted to clarify, because I've had two people say, well, Uber and Lyft have said they're going to leave the state. Well, I don't know if that's true. From the story from the Star Tribune today, Uber and Lyft have both said they'll delay their departure. Uber has said it will leave the Twin Cities. Lyft has said it pledged it stop operating in Minneapolis. Now, I'm not sure if Uber and Lyft operate in Duluth or in Rochester or in St. Cloud, but that they don't sound like, if they are, it doesn't sound like they're planning on leaving there. Now, they might not be operating in any other city, so that if as Uber says they'll leave the Twin Cities, that technically would be leaving the state. But Lyft has said they'll only stop operating in Minneapolis. So I've had two people point out that that's what they said, but that's the story here. This is the new story has said that no, that's not the thing. So 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Let me at him. All right. Let's get into the Nicolai Mew story. The St. Cloud County, or the St. Cloud, St. Croix County jury has convicted Nicolai Mew of first-degree reckless homicide for fatally stabbing 17-year-old Isaac Schumann during a 2022 confrontation with the Apple River in Western Wisconsin that turned violent. The jury of 6 men and 6 women also found Mew, a Prior Lake, guilty of 4 counts of reckless endangering safety for stabbing 4 other people in Schumann's group. He was also found guilty of 1 count of battery. Mew has been argued as acting in self-defense. Prosecutors had sought the higher charge of first-degree intentional homicide against Mew, but also asked the jury of 6 men, 6 women to consider the lesser charges. Defense attorney Aaron Nelson said he was surprised and respectfully disappointed by the verdict. In many ways, self-defense is a community standard. It's very dependent upon which group of 12 people within the community you ask. Schumann was from Stillwater, also stabbed in the confrontation on June 30th at a recreation spot near Somerset, where Alexander Martin, Dante Carlson, Anthony Carlson, and Riley Madison Mew was convicted of battery against another in the group, Madison Cohen. The jury had briefly returned to the courtroom first thing on Thursday to review video of the confrontation captured by a person that was part of the group that included Schumann. jurors reviewed the video for the one-minute mark when Mew first spoke to Cohen, who told Mew to leave after Schumann's group accused Mew of looking for little girls. Mew testified that he pushed Cohen because he was yelling. She was yelling in his personal space. Witnesses said Mew punched her, starting the brawl. Mew appeared downcast ahead of the verdict as Thursday, shaking his head as jurors watched the moment when his fear was really getting really high as he was put in testimony. He glanced down, took a deep breath as the video showed him fighting Schumann's group, stabbing people around him. The verdict came after 11 a.m. on Thursday. Jurors started deliberations Wednesday. Emotional testimony and evidence in the trial, key moments of the trial, prosecutor Carl Anderson closing arguments Wednesday alleged that Mew snapped and stabbed the teen the day out of anger. Defense attorney Corey Churafil, forgive me, disagreed. The defense attorney disagreed, telling jurors that his client felt frightened, trapped, and vulnerable after recovering from a heart attack and quadruple bypass surgery in 2020. Yeah. I think it is I think a little bit disappointing. Actually, let me take a quick break from the story here because I know the phones are kind of going crazy here still. Patrick, we do have our winner, right?
Yes, Vern and White Bear Lake, you've won the final set of pregame passes and tickets to see Sexy Liberal Saturday night.
Congratulations, Vern and White Bear Lake. Now, if you would like to go, there are tickets still available. There's a link on our website. You can go to am950radio.com, click on the link, get your tickets to Sexy Liberal, and off you go. Enjoy. By all means, I'll look forward to seeing you there. I'm going to be on stage at the beginning of the show as well, and I'll see you at the pregame tailgate party at On the Rocks, all right? So, yeah, it's going to be good fun. And reminder, tomorrow in studio for the full 2 hours is going to be Cliff Schechter. I'm looking forward to that. Going back to the Nikolai Mew story. I think one of the things that happens when something like this goes down is a tendency to eliminate the moments before. Now, this guy stabbed Schumann. That's not a deny. He killed him. I think this jury got it right. Frankly, I think they do. Because here this guy is. Now, will we ever know what he really was doing on the bank? Was he looking at people? Was he looking for a phone? Sounds like he was looking for a phone. I'm going to make the obvious point here. Alcohol was not a friend of this situation. And we want to kind of skip past that. That there is a lot of liquor bravado going on out there. And I'm not saying that anyone deserved this, not in any way, shape, or form. Not in any case. But when you're the jury in this case, I think you have to look at how it unfolded. And sure, he was, and I'll call it what it was, I think he was like a rabid animal as he was flailing with a knife at people. But it wasn't as if he jumped out like Jason Voorhees in a Friday the 13th movie and started stabbing people. He was confronted and yelled at, and, you know, I can understand there being a little bit of, you know, fear. Once again, not saying what he did was good, not in any capacity, or was justified in any capacity. But I think that this idea that the actions of the group should be completely and totally dismissed, that's a little bit disingenuous, I feel. He's going to go to jail for a while, and the civil trial against him will, you know, the families will get monetary judgment against this individual as well. But I think as hard as that might be, that a group of people screaming, taunting an individual, not saying that they deserve to get anything to happen to them, but you can't just eliminate that from the scenario and act as if we didn't do anything. We were just on our inner tubes floating down the river and Jason Voorhees in a hockey mask jumped out of a bush and started stabbing people. No, that's not what happened. And I do not think this guy should have been found not guilty, not in any way, shape, or form. I mean, he clearly killed somebody. But like I said, I think that there, when something like this happens and all of a sudden you realize, oh my God, someone is been stabbed and they're not breathing or they're dying, they're bleeding out. The mentality is to immediately say, we were minding our own business. And the video which captured the incident, which led to the guilty charge, also did present just enough of a, and the testimony as well, enough of a cover to knock it down from the original charges. And they wanted the first degree intentional homicide. He got the first degree reckless homicide. I'm not sure what the sentencing guidelines are in St. Croix County for that, but he's going to go to jail. And I think that that's a given. It's a sad thing all around. It's a sad thing all around. It's, to tell the truth, I want to be honest, I think it's one of the reasons why I myself avoid certain places where things have a tendency of going wrong far more than going right. And I think this is one of those cases where, and you know, it's, you remember we were talking about, and we weren't talking necessarily about, you know, a murder per se involved here, but we are talking about, you know, bad behavior. We talk about Big Island out on Lake Minnetonka, and there clearly is a lot of really sketchy stuff going on out there. There's a lot of sketchy stuff out there. I guarantee you during the summer, there is a ton of, you know, underage drinking, underage drug use, creepy dudes, you know, basically, you know, out there looking at the high school girls. I mean, that stuff goes on out there. And you can look at certain things and say, you know what? I'm good. I'm not, I don't need to go out there. And I think that that's just, I mean, there are some places that just seem to be more prone. Over the years, the Apple River has had some issues. And there is some closure here, at least. There is a guilty charge here, at least. But I can tell you a long time ago, I decided I'm not going back to the Apple River. A long time ago. And it wasn't because I foresaw any of this, but it's like going into a dive bar on a Friday night at 11. You know things are about to get spicy. So I just don't go. And once again, that's not implying that these kids deserved what happened to them to happen to them. But there was a lot of gasoline before the fire. How about we say it like that? 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Let's take a break, coming back. I got to get to the dog story, too, down in Mankato, because they now think they know who did it, who shot the dog. We'll talk about that. 952-946-6205. It's the Matt McNeil Show here on your Thursday. AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205 is the phone number. I don't actually think I brought this story up on the air. I posted this on the social media, I think one morning, maybe on Monday morning, about this, but I don't think I brought this up. So basically what it is someone shoots someone's dog in Mankato, and it sounds pretty horrible. Law enforcement suspects that the person who fatally shot the dog on the deck of a home near Mankato last month is a mail carrier who spoke months earlier about wanting to shoot his neighbor's dog because they were barking. I think you've got an effective line A to B at this point. I don't think we need McCoy from Law and Order on this at this point. This is according to a newly filed court documents. The disclosure came. Let's see. It's like, who do we wonder killed the dog? Well, there's a guy that said he was going to shoot the dog over there. Maybe we should check over there. The disclosure came Wednesday, the same day Blue Earth County Sheriff's Office said on its social media that investigators have identified a suspect, but no additional information will be released regarding the identity of that person at this time. Lily, a medium-sized mixed-breed dog, was killed shortly before 6:30 p.m. on March 30th in South Bend Township. About 2 weeks before the shooting, a threatening note was left outside the home of Alyssa DeBill on Newbert Lane and on property of another dog owner nearby that warned them to keep their dogs from barking, said Sheriff's Captain Paul Barta. Isn't this why you live out in the country, so you can have a dog that can basically bark and no one's really going to care that much? All right. Wednesday's court filings point to a man who lives in the neighborhood who has a long history of being bothered by dogs, either near his home or along the route he travels for the U.S. Postal Service. A search warrant affidavits filed in district court cleared the way for the sheriff's office to seize from the man's home a shotgun, various gun cases, a firearm magazine, and other gun-related materials. Law enforcement also has collected DNA evidence from the man who is identified in the filings as it prepares for possible charges. The Star Tribune doesn't identify the subject before they are charged. DeBill, who lives with the fiancé, Preston Fleischer, the 300 block of Newbert Lane, said that Lily, two other dogs, and their sons were home at the time of the shooting while she and Fletcher were visiting a friend. Wednesday's filing spell out the greatest detail yet, the circumstances surrounding the dog's death and the suspect's trouble coping with dogs. On March 14th, Fleischer called 911, said she found a note under a small rock on the garage that said, "If your dogs are out barking one more blanking time, they are dead." Wow. Jeez. That same day, a resident nearby received a similar note and also found a vehicle had recently been vandalized. This guy doesn't, this sounds like there's something, really mentally wrong here with this guy. On March, obviously there is. If he's shooting people's dogs. But wow, On March 30th, another neighbor heard the gunfire at the time Lily was shot and called 911. The victims and neighbors advised a new person had just moved in close by and they shared his name with law enforcement. Investigators determined he has submitted permits to buy guns over the years and has been the subject of hunting complaints reported to law enforcement. Okay. April 4th, the man was interviewed at the sheriff's office and admitted having threatening notes but denied shooting Lily. The next day, a coworker told investigators the man said about 4 months ago that he wanted to shoot his neighbor's dogs because they were barking. On the same day, the USPS Postmaster Mankato shared with investigators the man has a history of complaints issues with him leaving written messages at homes with dogs on his mail route. Well, my guess, if I can say, I think that there's your path to finding if this is the guy. You got one of those notes from any of those houses. If it matches the notes that showed up at the other person's house, I think he actually did admit, though, that he did leave the note. So the sheriff's office is a partner with the American Society of Prevention of Cruelty to Animals, and arrangements have been made for a necropsy conducted by the Veterinary Forensic Science Center to recover additional evidence, the sheriff's office said on Wednesday. Responsible gun ownership. Earlier this week, I talked about the guy at Chipotle who shot somebody because of guacamole. Here's a guy, and once again, I'm going to mention that one of the things that's kind of ironed over here, he shot these dogs on their patio porch as her kids were at home. He could have killed a child. But you see, the gun now comes the way that you solve your problems. Not enough guac? Bang. Dog barking? Bang. we see the problem as it arises around us. We see what is really going on here. We see the broken world that we have. And the worst idea we can have is have unfettered access to firearms in this world. Because this guns everywhere mentality, this is where it's going. You took a parking spot from me. Bang. You like the girl that I wish was dating me. Bang. I don't like the color you painted your house. I'm your neighbor and I think it looks ugly. Bang. And it's only after, and this is the crazy part. It's only after these people shoot something. I mean, on this guy, I don't know. This guy sounds like, it's only, what happens? And what happened in the case of Nicholas Meaux? All of a sudden, they're panic. All of a sudden, I've killed somebody. I've shot somebody. I've stabbed somebody. Maybe grotesque violence isn't the solution. You think? And the reality is you're always going to have a level of our society which is disgruntled and angry, mentally compromised. You are. The onus should not be on everyone else to keep guns away from them. The onus should be on us basically saying those people don't deserve guns. Period. I'm done with this argument at this point. I mean, after dealing with this circus clown car of pro-gun kooks that I've had to deal with today, you guys don't want a solution outside of more guns. And cops are getting shot. Dogs are getting shot. People at Chipotle are getting shot. Why? Because you guys, with your guns everywhere mentality, have put forward the idea that that's how you solve problems. And it's not. Native Roots Radio is coming up next. Listen to them. They're fantastic. We are back on a Friday with Cliff Schechter. Till then, see ya.